This is the Happy Rant Sports Podcast, in which Ted Cluck and Barnabas Piper rant about old sports, new sports, sports books, sports movies, and anything else related to sports that they feel like. Enjoy.
Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. I am Ted Cluck, joined as always by Barnabas Piper. And Pipe, it's Father's Day. How's your Father's Day been?
It's been good. I got a gift from the kids this morning, and then ate some like apple cinnamon roll gooey things that I got at the Nashville Farmers Market yesterday.
Nice.
Went to
baby.
Church. Went out to eat. Now I'm recording a podcast because the gift of silence is the greatest gift children can give to parents, and so
Absolutely. They're
being quiet in another room.
And dude, so my kid, he just got a nice phone, and he's been texting me like Moneyball quotes for the last 2 days. So I feel like when your kid's old enough to like be cool enough to text you Moneyball quotes, like that's all the Father's Day gift I need. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, and if your kid is texting you at all. That's good sign number one. And when they're texting you cool stuff like that, it's ultra good sign. So yeah, dude, it seems like things are going right.
You've seen Moneyball, right?
I have.
Classic. Yeah. He's sending me good quotes too. Like you know that old scout with the glasses?
Yeah.
Like he throws the club head at the ball, and when he makes like he's sending me stuff at that level. You know what I mean?
Oh, so it's like deep cut nerdy baseball.
Deep
talk.
Cut nerdy Moneyball. Yeah, baseball movie talk. So yeah, we're enjoying it, man. We're enjoying it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, I'm sitting at lunch this morning. He's sitting right next to me, and I get a text, and it's where Billy goes, "Chavi, you couldn't hit that bleep with a boat paddle." I'm like, "This is good stuff, man. More of this. This is when parenting gets fun." But Piper, podcasting is fun as well, man. And I'm excited to have a sports podcast. There are some business things that help us keep the doors open here at Happy Rant Studios, so that we can bring you more sports podcasts. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, so one of the things that we set up a few months ago is a Patreon account, which basically allows people doing the kind of things that we do, so any sort of content creation. So there are video producers and music producers and podcasters and writers and all sorts of people, and it allows the people who are fans of that to be financial supporters on a monthly basis, and there's no... You know, there's no limit on what you can do, like either on the bottom or the top end. So we have some people who donate like $1 a month, and we appreciate them. And we have some people who donate like $20 a month, and we appreciate them. And so because the sports podcast is sort of additional to our standard Happy Rant, there's some additional costs that go along with it. And so our supporters enable us to do stuff like this. And so just wanted to put the request out there to our listeners to say, hey, if you have it in your budget, to give us a few dollars a month, you can go to happyrantpodcast.com. There's a link there, or you can go to patreon.com and just search Happy Rant, and you can sign up to give. And there are some giving levels we have set up that come with free stuff. So like free books, free Ligaris Roasters coffee, depending on what level you're at. So just, we want to say thank you for giving as well. So just throwing that out there, because we love to do this and we will keep doing it. We're not doing it for the money, but there's a cost associated. And if you can help us cover that, it benefits everybody, I hope.
Absolutely. Or you could just send Seattle Mariners swag to me or Minnesota Twins swag.
I mean, that doesn't help pay the bills, but it doesn't keep us motivated.
It doesn't keep the lights on and the doors open, but it keeps us happy, and it keeps the talent happy.
Sort of keeps the internal lights on. Yeah, it keeps the fire burning bright.
Dude, it keeps the fire burning bright. It gets us through the dog days of summer, which, Piper, we have a lot of baseball to talk about,
yes,
because I am now a baseball fan. This is... This is exciting, and I'm happy to report that like this has taken, so it's socked in now, man. And can I just talk a little bit about some of the Mariners stuff that I'm enjoying, and you can lob some questions at me.
I would also like to congratulate you on prescient timing, because you managed to jump on as a Mariner. I'm not going to say Mariners bandwagon, because I have complete faith that you will stick with them through thick and thin.
Dude, I will. I've been with Syracuse football for like 10 years after doing something like this,
but.
So. I mean,
you managed to pick up the Mariners at the time when they have been the best team in Major League Baseball for like a month or a month and a half now. So excellent timing, Ted.
Dude, thank you. Yeah, I did. And they are on fire. And Pipe, I want to talk about just in generalities for a minute, and I'll be eager to hear from you on this, but just about sort of the pace and the rhythm of being a baseball fan is something that – I've enjoyed over the last month. So I've gotten into this rhythm where, you know, it's summer, so I'm not teaching classes. I am working on a book. But one of the first things I do every morning is just fire up the game. You can watch these like 8-minute condensed games on MLB TV. So I just watch the previous night's Mariners games. And, you know, I run it into my TV on the nice big screen, and I'm watching my team in like 8 minutes. And it's a really interesting thing because I think football fandom and the game of football itself is about these big bursts. You know what I mean? So mm-hmm. You've got one game a week, and even on a play-to-play basis in football as a player, you're working yourself up into this fever pitch where you do this insane thing for a few seconds and then you rest. But I feel like baseball fandom it's just so consistent. Like, you know, every morning there's a game to look at. Nothing that happens in the game, win or loss, like really moves the emotional needle all that much. But it's just like a super pleasant thing to have in my life, if that makes sense.
That is true between late March and like mid-August. If your team is in the playoff race, then all of a sudden that sort of like pleasant rhythm, I mean, it's like crickets and cicadas and tree frogs of summer kind of thing, that shifts because the playoff push in baseball is a whole different rhythm, and it doesn't compare to football because of the schedule difference. I don't mean that one is better than the other. They're just – but like every day does matter when there's a – you know, you're vying for the last wild card spot or the division lead or whatever it is. So give it another month and a half, and if Seattle is still doing as well as they are now, you might not have nothing to worry about because you might be leading the division by 42 games. But But that day-to-day rhythm becomes like you wake up in anticipation of either that night's game because you already saw the one that or the one the night prior, or to kind of dig into how did they win. And like there's just a different level of excitement.
Dude, totally, man. And I eagerly anticipate that, and I look forward to it. Can I just talk about a few things that I like about my new team?
Yes.
Number one, and I think I texted you a picture of this. The first thing I did after I signed with the Mariners, I got online and I purchased a jersey. It is a powder blue, like late 70s, early 80s vintage Mariners throwback jersey. It fits me perfectly. It is a beautiful jersey. Maybe we can post it on social media in the show notes, but right off the bat, I was very happy with that. I'm happy that the Mariners had a powder blue era. I think I wasn't going to sign with any team that didn't have a little powder blue in their history. So that needed to happen. And dude, there is a podcast, a Mariners podcast called The Wheelhouse with Jerry DePoto. Jerry DePoto is their GM. He is of indiscriminate age, but I would put him like just a little bit older than us, but not much. Which kind of pisses me off that there's a guy who's like that handsome and that successful and makes that much money that's just like a few years older than us. But
those guys seem to be taking over baseball because Theo Epstein and then his right hand man who I can't remember but who's the same sort of like handsome
ilk.
He looks like some Yale Harvard grad type of, you know, preppy
dude. Right, these guys look like they should have a sweater tied around their neck. They should be on like the stern of a boat.
And
you know,
the Twins have the same thing now. DePoto, because they're all of like the analytic generation, and so they come out of that sort of like Billy Bean was the first one, I should say, because he sort of adopted it first. He was still young and handsome at that age. Now he's middle aged and less handsome. But yeah, the young the young attractive GM is a thing now.
Dude, it is, and this is my only regret with not signing with the Tigers, because I did like the Ron Garden hire thing, because I like the old Don Zimmer, like fat, tobacco-spitting, you know, just kind of old-school baseball guy motif. I do like that. But, dude, I got to tell you, this DePoto podcast is phenomenal. I feel like just getting up to speed with the Mariners and getting to know kind of the ethos of the team. So the show is weekly. It's hosted by some like in-house Mariners talking head and DePoto. And he just lobs all these interesting questions at the GM about player acquisition, about trades that they've made, and some fun stuff too. Like what's it like to be on the road as a player? DePoto was a pitcher in the early 90s. It's just a really, really good listen. It's a really fun podcast. A lot of baseball teams will have like, you know, the newspaper of record in that city will put out a podcast that's basically just a mashup of, you know, highlight audio clips and post-game interviews and stuff. But
yeah, and they almost the only time those are of value is is like the trade deadline and things like that.
Sure.
where they may have
information.
But for the most part, those are really boring.
Oh, they are. They're really, really boring, which is why, you know, this DePoto thing is so nice. And I think, you know, there are very few GMs that could pull off talking about what they do with the same sort of panache that they actually do what they do. And he's one of the rare ones that can do it. So I'm really enjoying that just from a fan standpoint. Another Mariners thing I really like, we have a second baseman named D. Gordon, and D. Gordon wears stirrups. So D. Gordon, when I see him on the field, just the way his uniform hangs on him, he reminds me of Willie Mays Hayes from the movie Major League from the 80s. Did you ever see Major League, Pipe?
Yes.
Of course you did. Yeah, that's a rhetorical question. But D. Gordon reminds me of our very own Willie Mays Hayes, and he wears the stirrups with pride, which is a thing that I like. So
two fun facts about D. Gordon. His father was Tom Gordon, also known as Flash Gordon, who was had a very strong major league career as both a starter and reliever for a number of teams, but I think specifically kind of Boston made his name, so was known for having a killer curveball. His younger brother plays, his name is Nick, I believe, is the Twins' number one or two prospect at shortstop.
No kidding.
Yes, so he will likely be up with the Twins this year. So our two favorite teams have some family connections.
Dude, that's so interesting. Can we put a pin in that for a second and just talk like deep dive D. Gordon stuff? So the name D. Gordon, and without doing any Google searches, I feel like there's been a D. Gordon in every professional sport. Didn't one of them like win the dunk contest in the 90s for the Celtics?
That was D. Brown. But
D. Brown. Okay.
Yeah.
My bad.
No, that was Cedric Ceballos who did the shirt over his head thing, right?
That was Cedric Ceballos. What did D. Gordon do?
No, Cedric Ceballos, one of them did the headband over the eyes. The other one did the shirt over the head, I think, but I could be wrong about that.
No, you're right. It was some eyes obscured thing for both of them. But I don't remember what the means was, as it were. But
and there's definitely been a couple D's with sort of innocuous last names in football as well in very recent years. And I mean, again, it's innocuous, so I can't remember them all. But
yeah, for sure, dude. So staying on the name thing and staying in the infield, our shortstop is called Gene Segura.
Gene. It's not like Jean.
It's Gene. Not Jean. It's Gene, which is so great because it's like a 1980s mom name. I love that we have a player named Gene Segura.
Yeah, I mean, when I was in high school, I think all of my friends had moms named Nancy or Gene.
Dude, Nancy, Gene, Judy. Yeah, great 80s mom names. Yeah, Carol. Oh, dude. Yeah, I had like three Carols in my life, man. Amazing. So I'm really enjoying the infield based on D. Gordon and Gene Segura.
Also, they're both really good players.
They're very, very good players. Very fun to watch. Dude, you could make the argument that D and Gene were both 1980s mom's names. You know, D would be a little bit less prevalent, but I remember there being
like
a D.
I feel like D was the fun mom.
Yeah.
And Gene was like the steady hand mom.
Yeah, D's real name was Dorothy, but she went by D because she was fun. And she was like the kind of mom that wouldn't just take you to the public pool in the summer. She would like drive the extra 45 minutes to go to like a water park. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and all the other moms didn't really like D very much. She was a little, every time there was a dinner party, she was one glass of wine too many kind of thing.
She was one glass of wine too many. She knew the words to like pop songs that she would listen to on the radio in the car, and she wouldn't butcher them. You know what I mean? That's the kind of game that D was bringing to the table in the 1980s, which is why we all loved her. And we probably had a little bit of a crush on her.
A little bit for sure.
Yeah. Not to take it to a creepy place, but back to baseball, Pipe.
Enough with the Oedipus complex. Let's move
on. Yeah. I mean, I could talk about 80s moms all day long, but I digress. We have some great players on the Mariners. We have some guys who are just having incredible seasons. Mitch Haniger in left field, Nelson Cruz in right field.
Okay, can we stop for timeout real quick?
Yeah, yeah.
If I had just put the name, so before you picked a team, I said, all right, one of the top two or three hitters on your this prospective team's name is Mitch Haniger.
Yeah.
Would that have been an attractive trait, or would that have been a, what? That team sucks kind of thing?
Dude, it would have been attractive, but I'll tell you why. It would have been attractive because my best friend in the 80s, in childhood, whose mom's name was Judy, his name was Mitch. So, like, I have a soft spot for all Mitches. So the fact that one of Seattle's best players is Mitch Haniger, who's, you know, definitely going to be an all-star, I think, and could maybe be AL MVP. I mean, he's having that kind of season.
He is en fuego right now.
He's en fuego. Yeah.
If I told you the name Mitch Haniger, you'd be like, oh, he's the defenseman for the Detroit Red Wings. Like, that's
The Red Wings.
That's not a left fielder's name.
No, it's not a left fielder's name. It's like a bullpen catcher's name.
Yes, I was going to say backup catcher.
Backup catcher. He's hitting like ninth in the order. Mitch Haniger. Yeah, nothing special there. But yeah, very special player, having a really, really nice season. I like Mitch Haniger. I also like our teal jerseys. And I don't even know if I call it teal, but there's an alternate jersey that the Mariners wear that's kind of like, I guess it's all teal. But it looks really nice. It looks really good with the gray pants. I feel like it looks good with white pants.
It works because it's Seattle.
Exactly.
If Kansas City tried to do something like that, or like Atlanta, like they're just
like city, Cleveland.
Yeah, they're just cities where that doesn't work. But like the Pacific Northwest is all blues and greens in people's mind anyway. So teal is kind of the perfect alternate jersey.
Dude, it really is. So, like, all of this to say, Pipe, I'm really enjoying this team, man, and I'm really enjoying baseball fandom. So,
what are your feelings about Nelson Cruz? Because I feel like you might have developed a major crush on his swing by now.
Dude, yeah, Nelson Cruz is a beast. I'm enjoying Nelson Cruz. Like, my thing, though, is I always tend to kind of go the other way, and I get into the weird, like, offbeat players. A little bit more than the big time players. So like I'm a little bit more sort of like I'm really into Wade LeBlanc as a pitcher as opposed to like James Paxton. Paxton's like the marquee guy in the pitching staff, but like Wade LeBlanc is the more interesting guy to me.
The slight lefty who throws 89 miles an hour and is still just destroying people this year.
Dude, right. He won last night against the Red Sox, and he was throwing like 84 miles an hour. And I'm just like, how is this a thing? And his picture is great too. Like he just looks like a dude who you would have gone to high school with. You know what I mean?
When he looks like a Wade LeBlanc. Like you hear that name again, you're like, you know, he probably played high school tennis. You know,
absolutely, and totally looks like a Wade LeBlanc.
And instead, he's a successful major league pitcher. The reason I brought up Nelson Cruz, so I have a bit of a nerd aspect about me like favorite swings. Just
interesting, Pipe. Interesting.
You know, everybody. You know, you got like Ken Griffey Jr. classic, beautiful swing, etc. But Nelson Cruz is a weird one because he doesn't move his feet.
Yeah, you're right, dude.
And he just, you know, and
crushes the ball.
He got good as a hitter. Like he broke out in his late 20s because he's like mid 30s now. But he's hit like 38 to 48 home runs every year for the last 7 years or something like that.
Yeah.
And he swings like he's swinging a sledgehammer.
Exactly.
Doesn't move his feet. And you'd think he would hit like 240 with that swing because it just looks sort of, and he hits, you know, high 200s, close to 300. And I love watching him hit because he just has the weirdest right-handed swing and just mashes.
Yeah, he really does, man. You know what it reminds me of? So, again, growing up, this is kind of like a throwback episode to the 80s, but we had this guy in my hometown who was like a high school football star. His name was Bobby Banter. And Bobby Banter was a few generations ahead of me. Like he played high school football in the 70s. But by the time I was like of age and I was a kid and I was like going to parks and stuff, Bobby Banter was like a softball legend in our town. And by that time, he was like pushing 3 bills weight wise. He would come up to bat in like a pair of cut off jean shorts and like a pair of pony turf shoes, right? With a big chaw of tobacco in his lip. And his swing was very much like Nelson Cruz's in that there was no real movement in the lower half, but he just mashed the ball. And, you know, it was enough to make him a local legend in our very small pond. But Nelson Cruz obviously doing it on a much higher level. I feel like we have a great closer too, Pipe, in Edwin Diaz.
Oh goodness, he's just disgusting. That's what
he is disgusting, he's dude. Filthy. He's filthy. Like, he closed out the Red Sox last night. Our setup guy that we got from Tampa Bay in that trade. The trade happened right after I became a fan. So we got Denard Span and Alex Colomé's the other guy. So
who I think led the American League in saves last year. So not that, like, saves is a relatively meaningless stat, but leading the league means you had a good year at some level.
Sure.
And so they pick those guys up for sort of like B-level prospects was a
right.
was a nice little pickup after your star second baseman got busted for cheating.
Which is sort of,
it's like the only black spot on this year is that and a couple injuries.
It really is. Can we talk about that for a second, Pipe, from a fan standpoint? So how do you feel about a player after he's been nicked for performance-enhancing drugs? Does this change your opinion of a player at all?
No.
Me neither.
I'm staunchly of the opinion that they should just allow performance-enhancing drugs in general. Because to draw the line between, you know, like, they give this bogus designation where they're like, you know, we can replace your ACL with the ACL from a dead human.
Yeah, you know, we can put a human cadaver's, body part.
Same thing. Like, every pitcher who has Tommy John has artificial things done to their arm.
Right.
And they come back, and a lot of them bounce back stronger. Some of them struggle. But, like, it's an artificial thing done, a performance-enhancing procedure. But if you take any like testosterone, any steroids, any whatever it is, growth hormones, you get busted and you're out. What is it? I think it's 80 games, your first suspension, a full season, your second, and out of the league, your third, or something like that.
Yeah, it's crazy.
And it's just a stupid arbitrary designation because it just doesn't make any sense to me. Now, I can understand if they had specific drugs that they're like, these are unhealthy for you. You know,
right.
these steroids are bad for you, whatever. That's, I understand it. Or if it's illegal, that's also a good reason not to do things.
Sure.
But he took, Robinson Cano, we're talking about, took a diuretic, which is known as a masking agent for other performance enhancing things. So people take it to hide other things in their blood system or to flush it out of their system faster.
Yeah.
And he got busted for it. And he's been a respected player and a really good player whose body hasn't changed between the age of like 22 and 34. So there's no sign of anything, and he's out for 80 games. And I just think it's stupid. I hate baseball's drug policy.
Dude, I'm with you 100%. And it's crazy because, I mean, if you are a gross old man with like a little bit of money in your pocket, you can go to one of these anti-aging clinics and get steroids and growth hormone and all that stuff. Like, right off the street anyway. I mean, it's crazy. And I'll tell you this too, Pi. We're going to break a little news on the program here today. If I wasn't like married with kids, I would for sure take steroids. It's only the fact that like my wife would freak out that I'm not doing it. Because, I mean, I'm just fascinated by it. Like, the idea that you can enhance your performance, that you can stave off aging, that you could be stronger, faster, bigger, whatever. Like,
And the majority of them, especially for guys in their 30s, are recovery because these guys are playing a game every day. They're flying from place to place. They're sleeping in a – I mean, yes, it's a bit of a luxurious existence in one sense, but it's a strain on the body, and they take it to recover so their bodies can bounce back. And that is especially when you get to June, July, August, that's a major advantage because you're seeing things better. You're feeling better. You just have that extra fraction of a second in your swing.
A little bit of pop, a little bit of sharpness.
Because
you're
talking hundreds of seconds to recognize pitches and hit these. And so, it's an advantage. But they should just level the playing field and be like, you can – or they should expand what is allowed. That's what they should
do. Here's a list of what you can use under a doctor's supervision or whatever. Yeah. I agree.
I'm going to go ahead and stir the pot. I think everybody who has ever been suspected or busted for performance-enhancing drugs should be eligible for the Hall of Fame. And like Barry Bonds, Roger Clemens, all those guys should be in it. Barry Bonds is one of the top three hitters of all time. Roger Clemens is a top three pitcher of all time. The fact that they're not in the Hall of Fame makes the Hall of Fame a hall of jokes. Like, it's just dumb.
Yeah, it's like a half Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Dude, speaking of Halls of Fame, man, just to digress for a second, what do you think of Terrell Owens, like, not showing up for his Hall of Fame induction or announcing that he's not going to.
It's the most Terrell Owens thing ever.
It's Terrell Owens thing.
Oh, they're going to honor me? Guess what? I can make this even more about me. And guess what? I'm going to thumb my nose at it. People off. Yeah, like it just
absolutely.
Did he give a reason? Was it because he wasn't first ballot? Like, what was his beef? Or is it just him being him?
It's just him being him, I think. And what's awesome about it is that, like, he will do it, and then there will be backlash, and then he'll get offended about the backlash. Like, he'll be a real toddler about it, which is what makes it all the more entertaining to me. But
and he'll do interviews while doing, like, sit-ups on a bench press bench in his driveway in Malibu or wherever. You remember when he did that? I think it was during
the house that he's about to foreclose on.
And then there was the whole... Was it Drew Rosenhaus as his agent? Was he the guy who Rosenhaus was just doing the next question thing about? Remember
I
that?
Think
when,
so.
When it was like, next question. Like, every question that came his way, he was just, next question.
I think so.
It was a little bit, it was like the original version of Marshawn Lynch saying, I'm just here so I don't get fined, as in sort of great press conference moments.
It was like a less charming version of that, though. Because when T.O. did it, everybody's like, ah, this guy's an idiot. But when Marshawn did it, it was like, this guy is kind of charming and kind of cool, and you know he's kind of thumbing his nose at this whole thing, but in a good-natured way. I don't know, different guys, different outcomes. Yeah. But the other TO thing is that I guess he reached out to some teams. He's trying to make a comeback. I don't know how old he is, but
he should go play with Johnny Manziel.
Dude, he should. That would be interesting.
How amazing would that be?
Yeah, that would be really amazing. Should we use that as a segue into our Manziel moment?
I was trying to tee that up.
You were trying to tee it up. That's good radio, Piper. That's really good radio. So week one of the Canadian Football League schedule is in the books, and I'm happy to report that with the exception of one half of the last game that aired this weekend, I've watched every minute of every CFL game. So I'm well up to speed on this. I'm ready to talk about it. Breaking news out of Hamilton, Manziel did not play. Manziel rode the bench, which was expected, but the starting quarterback there struggled. So he struggled a little bit. Jeremiah Masoli is his name. He came after Marcus Mariota at Oregon.
That sounds like an Oregon quarterback, if my memory serves me right. So he's another sort of dual threat guy.
He's a dual threat guy. He runs a lot. Ironically, like he and Manziel are pretty similar in terms of their skill sets. So they're both shorter guys. They both like to kind of wait for the play to break down and then make something happen. But Masoli threw an ugly pick to end the game. The pick was they were driving and a score would have put them ahead, but he threw a really ugly pick and that sealed it for the other team. So it's a tough outing for Jeremiah Masoli. Still waiting for our first John Manziel regular season appearance in the CFL, but I'm excited. And
is there any word on potential quarterback controversy, or has the coach has he given the ill-fated vote of confidence to Masoli?
Dude, he's kind of given the vote of confidence to Masoli, but this is the same coach that said, you know, he wanted to sign Manziel so badly because Manziel could literally be like the best quarterback in the history of the CFL. This is what June Jones said about him in the offseason before they signed him. So some mixed messages coming out of Hamilton. Something to keep an eye on here, Piper, as the CFL season progresses. Do you think there's anyone that listens to this program that even remotely cares about the CFL, though, is my question. I would like to know, actually. So I'm putting this out there. This is an APB to our listenership.
Well, I can tell you that when we put out the call on the standard happy rant for potential, you know, live in Canada, we did get about a half a dozen responses from people saying, hey, would love to help you put this on. Now, the problem is Canada's enormous, and they lived in, like, every different province. But that tells me that we have a quorum of Canadian listeners, and some of them might like Canadian football. Who knows?
Dude, reach out. If you like Canadian football and you're listening to this program, reach out. I don't know where it will lead, but we want to build a little community here at Happy Rant Sports around the CFL and around the Manziel Minute. But let me be clear, Pipe. My CFL fandom is not tied to Johnny Manziel. That just makes it more interesting. But I am all in on the CFL, whether or not Manziel's involved. I just like I like the product. I like the presentation of the product. It's not a soap opera. There's no politics involved. I mean, it's just very straightforward football. And,
yeah, it's the highest level of football that seems untainted by you know, like recruiting, like anything that that money brings, you know. So you've got recruiting, yeah. You've got free agency, you've got prima donnas, because it's high-level football.
Yeah.
There's none of like the college coach diva-ishness, you know, no Nick Sabans or Urban Meyers or whoever's.
Yep.
There's no like NCAA ruining everything by being the worst organization in history.
yeah.
And there's none of the NFL like can't get out of its own way by doing really stupid PR things.
Yeah.
And
there's no oversaturation. There's not too many franchises.
Nobody's too rich.
Exactly.
Which means that people are there to play football. Because I think I have to imagine every one of those players is there for one of two reasons. They love football, or if they're at the top levels, it's the only chance to get to the NFL or back to the NFL once you're out of college.
Dude, yeah, and that's the cool thing about the CFL, though. And I don't know if this is like a directive from the league, but you know, when they interview the players, it's not all like, I want to get back to the NFL. You know, there are guys that seem to like genuinely enjoy playing in Canada, and there are definitely guys in that league that from a talent standpoint could be in the NFL. You know, like a Daron Carter, Chris Carter's kid, plays for Saskatchewan. James Wilder Jr. is the son of James Wilder, who played for the Bucks in the 80s. I mean, these are elite players who would be, you know, I've got to think they would be starters in the league, but you know, they're not talking in every interview about, I can't wait to get out of here and get back to the NFL. You know, there seems to be an appreciation for the league, the culture, you know, the playing experience in Canada. So, it's just a fun product, man. Fun league to watch. I'm enjoying it. I'm glad it's back. And I have to give a little plug to, some friends of mine north of the border, Travis Cura and Brazilian Ty. They run the best CFL podcast. It's called the Two and Out CFL podcast. They mentioned me on it one time.
That's a great name.
Yeah, Two and Out CFL podcast is great, man. They do a week preview and a week recap. They run down all the games, and the other thing they do in the Two and Out that I love is stadium culture in Canada. Like, unique food items are a big part of it. So every week it seems like they'll run down a unique item of food that you can get in the stadiums in the CFL, and
without trying to put you on the spot, because I realize it's always tough to remember things when people ask their questions. And do any come to mind from recent episodes that you were like, man, that sounds disgusting or amazing or whatever?
Yeah, one absolutely comes to mind, and I think it's in Saskatchewan. They do like a foot long Polish sausage with pierogies on top. So, you know, pierogies are like that pasta thing with like potatoes on the inside and you put gravy over it. It just sounds amazing. So like a foot long Polish sausage with pierogies on top. I don't even know how one would go about eating that, but I've got to think it's a great experience. With a smile. Absolutely. Absolutely. So Piper, speaking of a smile and speaking of athletes that we remember fondly, our last topic for today is athletes whose careers ended too soon. So as we think back on our sports, on our sports fandoms, I'm sure we can all think of guys who we just wanted to see more of. And for whatever reason, their careers were ended prematurely. So who comes to mind for you in this category, Pipe? Let's throw a few names out there.
Yeah, so as I was thinking about this, I felt like it could go kind of a couple routes. There's the guys whose careers were just like abruptly cut short, like Terrell Davis, for example.
Sure.
Who was
great one.
He had a 6-year NFL career, was the best running back in the league for half of that.
Yep.
And then was gone. I think degenerative knee condition was it. And then there's guys like, say, Grant Hill, who were spectacular for half his career, brutal injury, extended his career well into his 30s, but was just sort of a role player thereafter.
So yeah, I feel it was like never the same.
Both fit the bill because like their career as a star was finished because of injury. So those are two guys who came to mind. But the one guy who came to mind, the guy who actually inspired me to send you the question, was Kerry Wood, the pitcher for the Cubs.
Yeah.
Because
Kerry Wood, man, overpowering.
Yes, this is the 20-year anniversary of his 20 strikeout game. You know, so they're showing highlights, and I just,
dude, are you serious? It's been 20 years since that. Judas H. Priest. Oh,
so struck out 20 Astros, and not just this was not like a scrub Astros. This was the Bagwell, Biggio, Derek Bell, just loaded team, and he just destroyed them at Wrigley Field 20 years ago in May, I think it was.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, you know, so he pitched really, really well. And then, but he was just worked. Just, you know, it was kind of an era before they cared about pitcher protection. And Dusty Baker was known to even overwork his pitchers a little bit more than the average guy.
Yeah.
And then he was just done. Like he retired because he's only 40 now.
That's incredible.
And there are pitchers who are still pitching at 40. And guys like Jamie, like Bartolo Colon's 44. Now, granted, he's an exception to every pitching rule. But I mean, Kerry Wood, we lost 12 years of a career potentially because of injury. And so, yeah, he was the one who came to mind initially.
Dude, that's a great one.
He was so overpowering and amazing to watch.
That's a really great one to start the list with. And I remember about that, like, there was this really fascinating and kind of tragic dialogue every year about Kerry Wood's level of readiness, you know, and there were always these features about, you know, what did Kerry Wood do in the off season and how his arm is feeling. And there was always this tinge of hopefulness. Like, this could be the year that we get back to like the real Kerry Wood, but it never happened. And, yeah, that's a common refrain in sports, but, that's a great one to start us off with. So I have a couple from a similar era. These are both quarterbacks. They're both NFC North type quarterbacks. The first one is Jim McMahon. And I realized that Jim McMahon had kind of a long career, but he really only had like a 3 or 4 year window of being truly elite. So people forget that Jim McMahon was like an NCAA record setter as a passer at BYU. So he came out of that Lavelle Edwards BYU situation where he just threw the ball all over the field, came to the Bears. 83, 84, 85, had really good seasons. But then really after that, just had trouble staying healthy. And I don't think he ever played a full 16 games after that. He may have never played a full 16 games in his career, to be honest. But Jim McMahon was one who, if he had been able to stay healthy, I think he would have been a very special quarterback. The other one, and this one's kind of an alternate Brett Favre history, is what if Don Majkowski had stayed healthy? So Majkowski was the quarterback in Green Bay that got Wally Pipped by Brett Favre.
Majkowski, let's just say, as a Vikings fan, I wish he had, because Brett Favre made me miserable for a long, long time.
Dude, right. So those Packer teams kind of sucked. Like, they were bad teams, and Majkowski was like the little flicker of hope. He was kind of a runaround guy, kind of a playmaker, a little bit Manzellian in terms of, you know, what he would do. But Packer fans, I remember, got really excited about the Magic Man, was his nickname, Don Majkowski. He had a great blonde 80s mullet, was kind of a cool looking dude, looked good in the uniform. And then he goes down and the rest is history. You never see or hear from Don Majkowski again. So it would have been interesting to see how the Packer experience would have been different had Brett Favre remained a backup. He probably would have just like gained 20 pounds every year eating cheese and drinking beer in Wisconsin, and he would have been a guard by the end of his career, maybe. But those are two that are interesting to me.
And I've got guarantee more. If you asked him, he would have said, yeah, I can play guard.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. I've got some more, but I want to hear a couple from you, Pipe.
I think so. Here's an underrated one for NBA fans. Brandon Roy.
Okay.
Former
interesting.
So he played shooting guard for the Portland Trailblazers. He was drafted out of the University of Washington, and when he came into the league, everybody knew he had no cartilage in his knees.
Yeah.
And he was a spectacular basketball player. But he was sort of like James Harden version 1.0. The current James Harden is 2.0, where he was a big-bodied, super strong, played the angles, great passer. He wasn't as athletic as Harden is. Not quite as explosive, but averaged 20 points a game, averaged a bunch of assists. You know, he's sort of a triple-double threat every game. And I think he only played about 7 years. The Timberwolves signed him as a free agent. Maybe they traded for him. I think they signed him. You know, he played like 25 games with them and then washed out because he could no longer run or jump, which are relatively important in basketball.
Those are both rather key to basketball.
But the thing that killed me was, like, if he had good knees, he could have played till he was 40 because he was an angles player and he was so smart, pretty good shooter. He would have been able to play forever because he didn't rely on elite athleticism, and instead we only got a few good years of him, and then RIP Brandon Roy.
Dude, I'm glad you mentioned that, man, because that's a sports thing. That's a sports storyline that I love, where teams are just like, we're so in love with this player that in spite of all the medical red flags, like, we're just going for it. You know what I mean?
Well,
like, we're
just Portland especially is good at that over the years. They've
They had
Bill Walton at one point.
Sam Bowie,
yeah, which was not a great pick. Greg Oden over Kevin Durant, also.
Oh
not
my
a
goodness,
great pick.
Yes, dude, this is the Portland thing. Portland specializes in this. This is their MO. So who's defective in this year's NBA draft that they can, like, sink their future into?
Well, here's the thing. They've been good enough now that, like, it has to be a top five pick for it to matter. And they, you know, they're a playoff team, so they're, you know,
they're picking in, like,
their 20s, and so it doesn't matter.
Exactly.
But yeah, they've had a few winners over the years of guys like Greg Oden is actually one of the guys on my list because I think everybody knew he was going to have injury problems.
Yeah.
But I don't think anybody expected him to play, you know, 11 games and then just disappear. And
he was just done.
And he was it was back when big men really mattered. And he was, you know, he was 7'2 or 7'3. He was still sort of growing. He was an elite shot blocker. He was built like an athlete, not sort of Manute Bolish or Sean Bradley-ish.
He had the face of an 80-year-old man, though, like the Chief Robert Parrish, which is kind of an interesting thing.
The guy was 18 going on 74.
Exactly. And,
yeah. So, he's a hard one to talk about because, like, his NBA career never even really got started, but he clearly washed out early.
Dude, I like that one because he was kind of right at the end of the big men mattering era, you know. I mean, really, after Greg Oden washed out, that was kind of the end of it. You know, that was the end of the traditional center, you know, the traditional, like, 7 foot plus. Like,
well, yeah, because then LeBron went to Miami and they showed that you can win with an undersized team full of explosive wings and shooters.
Absolutely.
And then Golden State perfected it. The last team that thrived with was really, really good with a big man was that, like, the Orlando Magic Dwight Howard team.
Yeah.
But again, it was him and four shooters, and so he just, you know, cleaned up all the misses and stuff. But yeah,
in an alternate universe, if Greg Oden stays healthy, has some success in Portland, do you think we're still living in an environment where, like, standard big men are valued? You know what I mean? Like, I just wonder how it would have changed, like, trend thinking in the NBA. I mean, LeBron still probably would have gone to Miami and
yeah, I mean, I think the same move would have happened because the main reason it happened was just because of math. People realized that, oh, we get more points. 3 points is worth 50% more than 2 points. And so you can shoot 35% on threes and it's like hitting half your twos. And the geometry of the game shifts, not to mention that they changed defensive rules and that, you know, that made it a little bit harder for both big men on defense and big men on offense. And so now you get, like, there's big men still really matter. They just matter in a different way. And there's not any who you're like, just throw to them in the post and they're going to Shaquille O'Neal the other team into oblivion.
Dude, right. They matter in a different way. They have different skill sets. So, yeah, the big man has kind of evolved, but it hasn't gone away. So I have another one. I have another football one. This guy is actually still playing, so I don't know if he qualifies for the list per se, but it's RG3, Robert Griffin III. And I feel
he qualifies because to say that he's still playing is sort of a...
It's kind of a reach.
It's sort of a loose definition of playing.
Right. If he's on a minicamp roster in April, we mean that he's still playing, then he is. But so Robert Griffin III... Dude, people forget. People forget how good he was. People forget how perfect he was for, you know, the Kyle Shanahan kind of situation that he was in Washington when he was healthy. This was an unbelievable player with a really high ceiling who could do a lot of things. He had a great arm. He had world-class speed. Granted, I did write a book about him, so I'm a little bit biased, but... I would have loved to have seen.
But he was everybody's darling as a rookie.
He was everybody's darling as a rookie, and his ceiling was so high. I mean, I think, you know, as time kind of told in terms of, you know, him getting banged up, him being damaged goods, him, you know, rushing back into action too soon. I mean, all these things happened, and they all conspired to kind of ruin him, I guess. But you know, this was still a guy with a freakishly high ceiling. And then
he was supposed to be like, so Michael Vick broke everything in the early 2000s. And then Robert Griffin came along and they're like, oh, that's Michael Vick who can complete 65% of his passes.
You know,
and so he was, I don't know that he was quite Vic as an explosive runner, but I mean, just sort of that total package of athleticism and passing. And he was incredible as a rookie.
He was. He was incredible. He was deployed incredibly. He was used perfectly. You know, from a scheme standpoint, this was an exciting player. And so he gets hurt. He gets rushed back into action. He's never really the same when he comes back. Washington kind of settles for Kirk Cousins, and the rest is history. You know, Kirk Cousins does just well enough to like never really get the commitment from he never gets the marriage proposal from Washington. Washington continues to date Kirk Cousins. And, you know, RG3 kind of bounces around. He gets hurt again last year in Cleveland. Now he's with the Ravens on, you know, a kind of a backup to the backup sort of deal where, you know, he'll be in the same quarterback room with Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson, which is weird. But, you know, this is a guy that I would have loved to have seen a few more healthy prime RG3, you know, years. I think it would have been a lot of fun.
Yeah, he was – I mean, I think he came along about 3 years too early because he was a fluke injury, but also teams were not quite at a point of setting a mobile quarterback up to be a real dual threat. They because he got destroyed. I mean, he took so many hits, which only Cam Newton does okay taking those hits because he's a
260 pounds.
He's the incredible Hulk who can throw. And I think it's different now with the way they're used, you know, they're using the run pass option and moving quarterbacks around. Like they're using quarterbacks' mobility. Like look at the way Russell Wilson plays. And he doesn't take a lot of hits. Now, granted, Russell Wilson also is better at a very key skill than RG3, and that is sliding. RG3 was really bad at sliding. But I think if he
And I think Russell Wilson's just in general more nifty, as is Lamar Jackson. You know, I actually think RG3 was more like Vic than Lamar is like Vic in terms of Vic and RG3 were just freakishly fast straight line runners. You know, but RG3 didn't necessarily have the niftiness in the broken field. I mean, you watch Lamar and it's like watching Barry Sanders. You know, it's ridiculous. Like the guy can do everything in terms of changing direction. Yeah. But dude, here's an interesting question vis-a-vis RG3. When you look at the landscape of quarterbacks who have jobs in the league, and I'm talking lower third of the league starters plus backups in a lot of places, why isn't RG3 like in that discussion more? Because I mean, I look at some of these jokers that have jobs in the league and I'm just like, you know, the guy was a former, you know, number two overall pick. I mean, he's got this incredible body of work as a rookie. Like, why hasn't there been? And maybe he's a douche. You know, maybe he's just a terrible guy.
He might be recovering that now because I just read an article the other day, mainly because of my crush on Lamar Jackson. That said, RG3 is invested in mentoring him. Now, granted, we're like 3 weeks into off-season training programs, and so time is early, and think that could still fall apart. But yeah. I think he had a reputation for a few years as a guy who still considered himself the number two overall pick. You know, he was on par with Andrew Luck. He was this great player, even when he was no longer such a great player. And he was not willing to. I think if he had gone to his agent and said, "Just get me on a roster somewhere, and I will grind and I'll work," I think he probably would have, you know, found his way into either a solid backup job or potentially, you know, competing for a starting job. You know, think about like Houston before why am I blanking?
Deshaun Watson. Yeah.
I was going to say Deshaun Jackson. Yeah. That's a wide receiver. Yep. They had no quarterbacks. They absolutely could have used him, but I don't think he had put himself in that position. Maybe he is now. I hope, you know, he's still young enough that he could have another 6 years in the league, 7-8 years
absolutely.
In the league if he can make it work.
Yeah, for sure.
He also may have really lost something too. Like sometimes guys get injured and they just never come back.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah, I mean, you wonder, like, does Jacksonville win more games with a healthy, you know, Robert Griffin III or with Blake Bortles? You know, I mean, it's a funny thing. And I realize you can't draw straight lines. You know, you can't make that one-to-one comparison because there's a lot more that goes into the job than just, you know, an arm and a set of legs, and as we all know. But it is an interesting thing to think about. Pipe, any other compelling names on your list of careers that ended too soon?
Yeah, I've got two others, and they're very similar players in different sports.
Interesting. Lay them on me.
One is Johan Santana, Johan Santana was the Twins' ace pitcher for 5 or 6 years in the early 2000s. He won two Cy Youngs. He should have won three, but Fat Bartolo Colon stole one from him because it was back when they really cared about wins. Colon had like 150 strikeouts and a 3.50 ERA, but he won 20 games. Johan won 16 games with like a 2.0 ERA and 280 strikeouts and didn't win because the media is dumb. Then he got, the Twins didn't think they could re-sign him, so they traded him to the Mets at the peak of his powers, and he blew out his shoulder. And I mean, he was a dominant pitcher, and he was also the kind of dominant pitcher who likely could have aged well because he knew how to pitch, not just live off of a big fastball. And so he's one.
Uh-huh.
Priest Holmes is the other.
Oh, Priest Holmes, dude. Good name. Good name.
So, and honestly, I don't remember what happened to Priest Holmes, except that he went like back-to-back-to-back years with the Chiefs, just exploding every statistical measure. So 2,000 total yards. He might have rushed for 2,000 yards 1 year. I can't remember. I mean, he was just...
I think he did.
He caught like 70, 80 passes a year, and then he just disappeared. And I think it was a knee injury. But,
dude, what you're describing, there's a certain like subgenre of running back in the league that just has this, this freakish like 3 or 4 year span, and then they flame out. You know what I mean? And I think part of that is a function of the position. Sometimes it's a catastrophic injury of some kind. But
I think Holmes was another guy who I think he got his chance at like 26 or 27.
Oh, yeah, he was an undrafted free agent. And so, I mean, he bounced around for a while.
And so he, when he was doing all that, it was like at a running back's peak years, those late 20s. And so if it was injury, then when he came back, he was 31 or 32, and that's like 84 for a running back.
Dude, it's crazy, and it really paints the, like, LaDainian Tomlinson, Adrian Peterson, Walter Payton type career in a different light, where you get these, like, gladiators who just string 10 or 12 years of dominance together, and you're like, how does that even happen? You know, I mean, that's like,
when a guy like
alien activity.
AP who missed two full seasons, one early in his career and one late in his, later in his career, and came back stronger. Yeah. And that's just, it's insane.
It really is, man. It really, really is. So I actually have, a running back and a defensive lineman last on my list. The running back is Kijana Carter. Do you remember this guy?
Yeah, Penn State. I think he was a Cy Young, or not a Cy Young, a Heisman winner, right?
Yeah, and he was a number one overall pick to the Cincinnati Bengals. This was in the mid '90s, back when running backs still got picked high. And I think he was a number one overall pick. First preseason game of his first year, he blew his knee. And this was back when, if you blew your knee, you were kind of like, if not done, then sort of done. And he was basically done after that. I think he came back, played in a few games, but he was never even a starter in the league anymore. So Kijana Carter is one. It would have been a fun thing to see a healthy career out of him. The other one is near and dear to me, near and dear to my adopted area of the Pacific Northwest. Steve Entman was a defensive tackle from Washington, very dominant college career, huge neck roll. So Steve Entman is in the neck roll Hall of Fame for me. He's first ballot neck roll Hall of Fame. Dominant career at Washington, was drafted. I think he was a top five pick of the Indianapolis Colts. That was the year that they had Entman and Coriat that they picked at, I think, in the first round together, and had a dominant rookie season. Then he had neck problems, knee problems, a variety of surgeries, never really recovered. But I think he would have wrecked the league for a decade. He would have been a Dan Hampton, Steve McMichael, interior disruptor of a player if he had stayed healthy. So he would have been the kind of guy that got like 8 or 9 sacks a year, rushing against centers and guards, which is hard to do. So Steve Entman would have loved to have seen a long career. He was a personal favorite of mine, like in the high school years. Yeah. I was a huge Entman guy.
I feel like there's a couple obvious ones that we should roll off just so listeners don't get mad at us.
Sure.
Bo Jackson.
Absolutely.
I mean, he's sort of the quintessential, goes without saying, because he was he was larger than life, and then you know, hip injury, and he was gone. Penny Hardaway was Penny and Grant Hill. I had them both on my list because they were they played at the same time. They were both these like 6'7", 6'8", multi-talented players. Kind of before that was a thing in the league. They, if those guys had stayed healthy, the NBA might have reached where it is now, like 10 years earlier.
Dude, absolutely. I was gonna say that those guys were both like really good superstars too. So the other day I was trying to explain like the cultural impact of Penny Hardaway on my kids, to my kids rather. And, you know, I was trying to explain the commercials and the Little Penny and, you know, this being kind of the burgeoning era of like the shoe superstar in the NBA. Pre-injury, he was that guy. He definitely would have been that guy. That's a really good one.
Coaching at University of Memphis now. Wish him luck. Former players don't always do well, but that would be. I mean, that's where he came out of into the pros. So, and then the last one. I mean, there's a long list, but the last one that's incredibly obvious is Tiger Woods.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
dude, that's interesting. People, talk about that.
Well, Tiger Woods. You know, he kind of fell off the face of the earth after his very scandalous car crash, golf club beating by who's now ex-wife. At that meaning she whooped him,
right?
Seemingly rightfully so, given the details that came out later. But it was a knee injury that derailed him.
That's true.
He's never been the same. Like he's won some tournaments since then, but I don't think he's won a major since then. Maybe he came back and won one.
Yeah.
Or maybe he won it on the torn knee and then got it repaired. But I mean, he was far and away the best golfer in history to that point in his career. And
And
he had changed the perception of golf. That's the thing.
I think we talked about this on an old episode, but you've read the Tiger Woods book, right? Or you were going
to
read it?
I haven't read it yet, no.
I haven't read it either.
I want to, but...
There's a lot, and I listened to a podcast on it, so I haven't read the book, but I mean, there's a lot in there about how his weird, like, obsession with the Navy SEALs, his weird workout habits, like, he got too yoked up. I mean, there was a time in which Tiger Woods looked like he could play middle linebacker for the Baltimore Ravens. You know, I mean, he was just jacked beyond belief, and it kind of screwed up his swing, screwed up his, you know, just the composition of his body.
He fired the swing coach who he had through all of his successful years and tried to rebuild his swing. And I think, who was it? It was Wright Thompson wrote this incredible long form piece. If you just search Wright Thompson, Tiger Woods, you know, it's, I don't know, 12,000 words or something. And it's brilliant. But he talks about how it was, like, there's no reason for Woods to do that other than he was bored and wanted a new challenge. It's almost like if Michael Jordan had been like, you know what, I think I'm just going to be a lefty this year.
Exactly.
And it was so – I mean, I remember in high school and college, like, I don't care at all about golf. I loosely pay attention to it because I kind of follow all sports loosely. Sure. But I would tune in to the Sunday round of majors because Tiger Woods was playing. I would tune in to watch the red shirt, the red Nike shirt, just sweep the field.
He was a rock star. He was dominant.
I have not watched a round of golf since he stopped competing in majors. I think he did that to a lot of people like me.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he's sort of the quintessential, like, what might have been.
Oh, most definitely. And he brought a huge kind of new audience to the game of golf. And he sort of he was that bridge between, golfers being like kind of fat smokers and Sansibelt slacks to being elite athletes. You know, he was the guy that kind of ushered in that transition.
He put John Daly out of business, let's say.
Yeah, dude. So I'm glad you mentioned Wright Thompson. I'm a huge admirer, huge fan of Wright Thompson's work. Let's do this for our final, like, you know, and I know we've been going for almost an hour, so we should wrap it up. But instead of a book recommendation, let's answer this question. What sports writer's career would you want? So, I mean, if you could swap places, if you could have any sports writer's career, who would it be?
Man, oh man, that is...
That's a tough... Maybe that deserves its own... That might deserve its own segment, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, the quick answer... Yeah, let's make that a segment. Let's not do a quick answer, because that way we can talk about some different great ones. Plus, I want to put a little thought into it. But that's a really good question.
Yeah. So, okay, let's end with this. Favorite Wright Thompson long-form piece?
Let's see. He did one a few years ago on the racism that black soccer players in Europe face.
Interesting.
I think it was soccer players of African origin who were playing. I think they play for the French national team, I think, but mm-hmm. were playing in Italian leagues. And, you know, just his ability to describe both the pressure on them, their feelings, the pain that it caused them, the fear, and then the what it's like in those stadiums. That's the one that stands out to me. I mean, the Tiger Woods one is probably, it's right up there as well. But yeah, I don't even remember the name of the piece, but it was on racism in European soccer.
Yeah, I'm going to have to check that one out, sure.
So the reason that one stands out to me is because I don't care about European soccer. Wright Thompson is the kind of writer who makes me interested in things I don't care about because that's how good he is.
Dude, that's so true, man. So true. I think a great writer can make you care about anything. And I think my favorite Wright Thompson piece is the one about Michael Jordan turning 50. So this one dropped a couple of years ago.
Yep.
In true Wright Thompson fashion, you know, it's long. He spent some time with Jordan in Charlotte as Jordan was trying to, you know, be a GM basically and be a front office guy rather than, you know, just being this dominant player. And it was really like tinged with sadness because, I mean, I think at the end of the day, Jordan is a player. You know, Jordan is a savage physical being. And for him to be behind a desk, you know, trying to make trades and trying to be the, you know, the front office guy was just not a perfect fit. And I think at the heart of hearts, Jordan always wanted to play and he always wanted to dominate people in that way. So great read, Wright Thompson, a great writer. And Pipe, this has been a great podcast. I enjoy doing Happy Rant Sports. Again, hit us on Patreon. Tell us that you like the program, support us a little bit, and we will keep putting those out there. Piper, I've done what I always do, which is get to this point of the program and not have a name ready. So, of all the names that we bandied about today, who's our sign off name?
How about one we didn't bandy about? And it's another. Okay. It's my favorite all time baseball player who I left him off so as not to be a homer, but okay. His career was cut short by injury, and it's Kirby Puckett.
Oh, Curb. Absolutely. This has been the Happy Rant Sports Podcast. Thank you for listening. And until next time, Kirby Puckett.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
God kept calling my heart. Like, I just knew he was my safe place.
I hope people don't walk away going, wow, you're really awesome. More than like, wow, Jesus is really interesting. And he's really awesome.
Everybody on this planet is dealing with some sort of what if.
How does that one courageous decision affect the whole world?
A ship in harbor is safe, but that's not what ships are built for.
If you were encouraged by what you just heard, please search Trevor Talks on your favorite podcast platform or lifeaudio.com.